Hey, you guys, what's going on? It's Monday.
It's Monday, yeah. Yeah, it's Monday.
Yeah, sorry, I have a little bit of a cold, so my voice sounds kind of fucked up more than usual.
I never caught that. It came down with it, and then I started spraying that colloidal silver and fucking taking zinc. And
well, you had a sore throat.
Had a sore throat. Sore back of my nose was sore for a couple days, and then it went away.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, mine's really not, it's not that bad, it's just kind of, like, annoying more than anything.
Should have drank some of that colloidal silver.
Nah, shit didn't do anything.
It did something for me, every time.
How do you know?
It just seems like it never really, it's like if you catch it early, it's like you sidestep, you know. And I think zinc also helped.
It's all right, I'll
eating a bunch of zinc.
I'll be all right.
Zinc and vitamin D.
I don't usually get all that sick anyway.
Yeah.
Danny Rowling says, Polly's Restaurant in this film was used in a Canadian show called Beachcombers, and now it's a restaurant called Molly's Reach, which I definitely want to eat there. Just saying, hey, that's pretty cool. Katavathan says, never seen this one. Yeah, I kind of feel like this is one of those Stephen King adaptations that sort of people forget about.
It's pretty good.
It's not great, but it's pretty good. It's a pretty good one. I mean, obviously, it came kind of like a few years after one of the best Stephen King adaptations, which was Misery, and came out the year before another one of the best Stephen King adaptations, which was The Shawshank Redemption. So this is another one that's kind of like mid-tier, I feel like.
Everybody in it's famous. Max von Sydow plays like a devil. He's good in it.
Yeah, he's the best part about this, really.
He plays it well.
So
I would consider it like a Max von Sydow movie.
Yeah, he's really like the main reason to watch this. But I mean, it has a great cast. Like Ed Harris is in it. He has like a big part. Bonnie Bedelia is in it. You know, she was in Die Hard, obviously, among other things. J.T. Walsh is in it. Like Amanda Plummer is in it. Like a whole bunch of people are in it. It's like really cool.
Basic premise is the fucking devil shows up in town, gets his grip on the town by getting to know everybody. Of course, he just looks like a regular man. And throws so many crosses between the people, he gets the entire town to fucking fight each other to destroy the town. And it's pretty cool how it comes out. You can see a lot of Stephen King stuff in it. I never read the book, but I could see, watching the movie, I could imagine how it was described or written in the book when King describes things. The dude who killed his wife and regretted it and shit. It's kind of like the Trash Can Man, kind of like that. He had a lot of characters that were like that.
I kind of feel like I read this book, but it was a long time ago. I mean, I've read most of Stephen King's stuff, like, pre-90s. So I definitely did read this one. I kind of feel like the thing about Needful Things, though, the book is fucking long. And it has, like, a lot of character development. And there's a lot of characters because it kind of, like, goes into all the relationships between everybody in this town. And it's actually really good. So I kind of feel like, I mean, it's not really the filmmaker's fault, but you can't really cram all that into one movie. Interestingly, and I haven't seen the longer version, but the version that's on, we watched it on Peacock, it's on there for free, is I think 2 hours. Now, TBS, I believe, like right around a year or two after this came out, they showed it on TV and they showed like a 3-hour version. So they put like an hour's worth of shit back in there and like some of the scenes were rearranged and whatnot. So I haven't seen the longer version and maybe it's good because I kind of feel like, I think that's really the only complaint that I would make about this movie is that it doesn't really have time to get more into like all the characters, like all the relationships between one another because it's trying to like put forward, you know, the premise. And so they don't really have a lot of time to, like, get down to, like, all the characters and stuff because there are so many. And I'm sure they, like, trimmed it down.
Somebody says, is this like The Dark Half? I'd say no. No, I liked The Dark Half, but it's not like The Dark Half.
Although, interestingly, did you know that the character of Alan Pangborn, the sheriff, who Ed Harris plays in this movie, is also a character in The Dark Half?
Yeah.
Except in that movie, he's played by Michael Rooker.
Yeah.
But he's so, because it's set in the same town, Castle Rock, so some of the characters overlap. And actually, they don't mention this in Needful Things, the movie, but in the book Needful Things, Leland Gaunt, who is like, you know, the devil guy, he actually hires Ace Merrill to be his assistant. And Ace Merrill was the bully from The Body, which was made into Stand By Me. So there's a lot of kind of like characters like showing up in both things. Yeah, Needful Things is a really good movie, said Sebastian. Danny Rowling said, this would have to be my favorite Stephen King adaptation film and book. Just saying. Interesting. Because, like I said, I kind of feel like this one slips under the radar. I had kind of, like, forgotten about it. I had seen it before, but I'd kind of, like, forgotten about it until I was on Peacock because we were watching the 1984 Firestarter, and they had some other Stephen King adaptations on there. I was like, oh, Needful Things. I haven't seen that in a really long time. Like, we should watch that and talk about it. Hugo said, I liked The Mist, despite the CGI. I really liked The Mist as well.
Yeah.
And I actually really like... I know the ending is kind of divisive because it's different from Stephen King's ending, but I kind of like the ending. I like that it was, like, really fucking depressing. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was depressing, but it kind of showed the army as winning, which, you know what I mean? Which, that's not the way it was in the book. In the book, they just travel on to The Mist, and they were fucked. They never stopped
it. I mean, in the book, it was just kind of, like, ambiguous.
Yeah.
Like, it just kind of left it hopeful, but maybe it's not going to, you know what I mean?
I think they should have maybe shown what happened to him, but I don't think they ever should have showed the army stopping The Mist. Yeah, I don't think... Because it was always open when I read that short, is that he might write a book happening in that universe.
Yeah.
Because I always liked Stephen King when he was talking about parallel universes, like the Gunslinger universe. The Dark Tower universe, you know?
Yeah,
and then the Talisman universe,
yeah, Talisman,
where you're in a house,
which is that one that he wrote with Peter Straub.
Yeah, the shit that I always liked when King was talking about something that wasn't taking place in this world, but a parallel universe, a lot better, because it opens up a lot of possibilities to talking about shit that never existed but could have.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he's got. In The Gunslinger, he's got guns in... Well, he had it in the same thing in The Talisman. He's mentioning guns that only existed in parallel universes, you know. Like Ruger 45 automatics and shit. But that was in a time when Ruger didn't make those. It was just kind of cool shit, you know.
Danny Rowling says, the truest form of this TV adaptation film can only be found on VHS, which they never should have cut out of the film, in my opinion. Yeah, I haven't seen the longer version, like I said, because we just watched, like, the theatrical cut, but I have heard that there is a much longer version of this, which is, like, three and a half hours long, something like that. And I do kind of feel like maybe this would benefit from being, like, expanded out, just because it has so many characters. And I think it would be good if they kind of, like, drilled down a little bit into the relationships between the people that were sort of there and sort of, like, festering before Leland Gaunt got there, because that's kind of what Leland Gaunt's whole thing is. It's implied that, yeah, he's the devil, essentially. And he just goes from town to town because this is, I guess, something that the devil likes to do. He just likes to fuck with people. And he just goes from town to town, and in this particular town, I don't know if he does the same thing in every town or not. You're kind of led to believe that it's a similar kind of thing. He comes to the town, he opens up like an antique store type deal called Needful Things, and when you go in there, he seems to have exactly the one thing that you've always wanted. Now, in the movie, it just seems like he's like, hey, I've got that thing that you wanted. Like, and he's supernatural, so he can guess what that is. In the book, I think it's more clear that he just gives you, like, some worthless crap, and almost has, like, a glamour on it, so you see it as whatever you want it to be.
Kind of like he gives you the push.
Yeah, kind of like that. So I don't think they went so much into that in the movie. I think he just would have, like, magically whatever, and, you know, I guess it doesn't really matter. But you know what's interesting? You know who directed this? Fraser C. Heston, the son of Charlton Heston. Hmm. Directed this movie. And this was actually the only movie that he ever directed that his dad wasn't in. I didn't even know that he directed movies. It just goes to show what I know. And the guy that wrote the screenplay, which is obviously adapted from the novel, also adapted the 1978 version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. He directed The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, which is a great cult movie. And he co-wrote Big Trouble in Little China. Hmm. So there you go, too. But yeah, so basically what his whole deal is that he gets people to, he's like, here's this thing that you've always wanted, like the main object that you've always wanted, and I'll just like take 95 cents or whatever the fuck for it, or whatever money you have for it, but you also have to like play a prank for me, and it's not a big deal, and no one will ever know it was you. And then he'll tell you what he wants you to do. So what he's basically trying to do is turn everybody against one another. So at the beginning, he has, like, this little boy, and the little boy comes in, and, like, the thing that he wants more than anything is, like, this 1956, I think it's 1956 Mickey Mantle, like, baseball card or whatever. And so he's like, yay, I have that. And look, it's even, like, made out to you and all this stuff, like, with your name on it and shit. And he's like, all you have to do is kind of, like, throw mud and turkey shit, like, onto... Well, that's what it was. It was like muck, you know.
Yeah.
You know, onto the neighbor's like sheets or whatever. And so he does that, and she thinks that it's Amanda Plummer's character, Nettie Cobb, because those two have been like feuding. So then like the feud kind of like blows up. So that's kind of like what his MO is in town. It's just making everybody think that everybody is like fucking everybody else over. So it's like it just keeps escalating and escalating and escalating until, you know, people are fucking. You know, J.T. Walsh's character is, like, beating his wife to death with a hammer, and it's, like, people are, like, planting bombs in the church and shit like that. So it just keeps going, and, you know, and meanwhile, like, Max von Sydow is just sitting back there with his long-ass yucky fingernails being like, you know what I mean? So it's like, but for some reason, like, Ed Harris's character, they don't really specify, and I don't remember if they specify in the book or not. Maybe somebody that's read the book more recently can tell me. But, why, I guess they kind of, like, say this in the movie, but, like, why he doesn't succumb to the same thing that everyone else is succumbing to. I guess because when he comes in the shop and Leland asks him, like, what, you know, what do you want more than anything? And he's like, oh, I already have everything that I want. So maybe just because he's not needy or he's not, like, into owning objects or anything like that. So he so Leland can't really get, like, a fix on him. You know what I mean? Because... He doesn't, because the thing about it is that he kind of, like, does it different for everybody. Like, Bonnie Bedelia, who in this is, you know, plays Polly, and who is, like, Ed Harris's girlfriend, and she has really, really bad arthritis, so Leland, like, gives her this kind of magical amulet that, like, makes her arthritis go away, and she's, like, really reluctant to give that up, as you would be. So he kind of knows, like, where everyone's weak spots are. But I guess, like, with Alan Pangborn, the sheriff, since he doesn't really want anything in particular, and he's not from there, too. I think they established he's from Pittsburgh, right? Like, he's from a big city. So maybe the fact that he's not from there, so he doesn't have, like, these deep roots of, you know, hatred with all these other people and, like, all these simmering resentments that are kind of, like, brought to the fore. Maybe that's what it is. I'm not really sure. But, yeah, I mean... As Stephen King adaptations go, this one is, like, a pretty good one, especially for the 1990s. Like I said, a lot of really, really good ones came out of the 90s, like Misery and Shawshank Redemption and stuff like that. So it's not, you know, that great compared to those, but it's still, like, a pretty good one. It's still, yeah. Like, worth watching.
It's in the upper half.
Yeah.
Of quality.
Yeah. I mean, it does... I do kind of wish they had done more character development a little bit, but like I said, I know that they didn't have, like, all the time in the world. And it does kind of, like, in the middle part, it gets, like, a little bit repetitive, I guess, because it's kind of, like, just the same thing. It's like, oh, here's this thing that you wanted, and here's this, you know, prank that you have to go pull, and you kind of know, like, what's where all the wires happen. Are getting crossed and everything like that, but that's okay. It's, and, like, you know, and the end is, like, slightly, slightly cheesy, but that's all right.
It's just a very 90s production.
It is, yeah.
But not, like, bad 90s. It's, like, okay 90s. Pretty good 90s.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
And like I said, I kind of feel like this one sort of gets forgotten about. I mean, yeah. Which is not... It's not surprising, I guess, because so many fucking... Do you know so many fucking... adaptations of Stephen King stuff has been made that I can't even that every now and then I'll come across one that I didn't even know they made, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, especially ones that were based on maybe some of his novels that aren't as well known, or like his short stories or something. Mm-hmm. Like, every now and then I'll come across, like, a couple years back I was on Netflix and I came across a movie that had the kid that played Carl in Walking Dead, and I think it was called Mercy. But it was actually based on Stephen King's story, Grandma, which was from one of his old, like, short story collections. I was like, holy shit, I didn't know they adapted that into a movie. Who knew? But yeah, so it's like he's written so much stuff that it's like a lot of them get lost in the cracks. And especially because a lot of them are, you know, like I said, are good, but aren't really, like, fucking amazing. You know what I mean? Because his stuff is just so... I mean, we talked about this when we were talking about Firestarter, I guess. Like, his books are so... The characterization is so rich, and so much of it, like, happens internally, like, people's thought processes and stuff, and that's really, really hard to, like, convey in a movie, I guess.
Yeah.
So maybe that's kind of why There's not that many, like, fantastic ones. But Hugo said, I like all remakes of the Body Snatchers, also The Faculty. Oh, my God, yeah. You know what? That had never occurred to me that that movie was actually sort of like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers. A take on it, but I guess it is. I haven't seen that in a long time.
Your legs are getting nice, Jenny.
Thanks.
Yeah, Jenny working out. These legs are turning out pretty good.
Yeah, I did
need
a lot.
Get you some damn stripper shoes on there, man. Fucking, you're going to get laid.
Okay.
You're going to get laid. Yeah, you're not going to be able to get out of this room by yourself.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, whatever. No, you look good, though. That's cool. I'm going to get a picture. You guys can see. She's going to this motherfucker.
Well, yeah.
Your nose hurt?
Yeah, I have a cold, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Slash Fred said, I love watching TV adaptations of movies. The TV adaptation of Child's Play 2 has some added scenes. Like when one of the staff members, the good guy, is driving, he calls his wife. Oh, yeah, that's the thing. It's like sometimes, I guess, when they show a movie, like not theatrically, a lot of times when they show it on TV, if the runtime is like awkward, a lot of times they'll add in more scenes, like they'll make it longer so that it like takes up a bigger chunk of time. So sometimes like the shit you saw in the theater, that's like not even what they, I think they do that with a lot of Stephen King stuff too. Slasher Fred said, Amanda Plummer had guest starred on the first season of Tales from the Crypt called Lover Come Hack to Me. Oh, I remember that one. I remember that one. She played the wife of a guy who marries her only for her money. Yeah, that was actually one of the better episodes. I really need to rewatch the Tales from the Crypt series because I remember really, really liking that. The chick in this film with the Elvis glasses is the kid, Brian Rusk's mother, that homages her character from the book, which is cool because she's obsessed with Elvis. Oh, okay, yeah, I see what you're saying. Bonnie Bedelia is Macaulay Culkin's aunt in real life. Holy shit, I didn't know that. Okay, well, there you go. The explosion at the end was one hell of a good stunt next to the gas station explosion in Christine. Yeah, that is one thing. Like, the end of this with the shop blowing up, I mean, that looks really good. It doesn't even look like... I don't know. I mean, it looks like they really blew up a building. I'm assuming they did. It didn't look like miniatures. It didn't look like... And it looked like the actors were fairly, fairly close to it. Maybe it was optical illusion, but yeah, that did look really...
Yeah, that one house, they blew that shit up.
They blew that shit up,
for real. I saw the fucking bottom of the superstructure and the whole fucking floor curl up and then go back down. All the wood breaking apart. That was a real house.
Yeah.
They used a low explosive to do it. TNT, probably. Well, that's kind of a high... Probably black powder. Because if you use a high explosive, it would have shattered all that wood. A low explosive would just kind of heave it. That's why it was coming up there all in one piece and just kind of flexing. But it looked cool on camera.
It did, yeah. And I have to say, I really liked JT Walsh in this. We were talking about people chewing the scenery and how, like, yesterday when we were talking about the priest in Rawhead Rex, mm-hmm. and JT Walsh kind of, I don't want to say he, like, chews the scenery, but he just, like, goes way the fuck out there with it, and it's really, really fun. Like, yeah. He just goes completely evil at the end. He's the one, I love the scenes of him. His needful thing was this toy that was like it was actually pretty cool, actually. It was like a little racetrack, like, with horses on it. He was like a gambling addict or whatever, and all you had to do was like touch the horses and like say the name of whatever the race was that day, and you could run the race and it would tell you like which horses would win. So it was like supernatural. And so like some of the shit, like, and he was like, so remember, he was like super mean to his wife too. He kept calling her like a moron, like all this other kind of shit, and she was kind of like oh, well, okay then. And that was just like funny. But yeah, he was like a funny character. And like Ed Harris was fucking great in this. I loved like Ed Harris's line, like when JT Walsh and like the other cop are like arguing in the hallway or something, and he's just like, that he's like, I moved to this town like because I thought all the worst I'd have to do is like get cats out of trees. And he's like, but no, it's everyone, it's insane everywhere. Yeah. It was just like so fucking funny.
I'm gonna have to reverse my opinion of that being black powder. There was no smoke, so they must have used ANFO or diesel fuel to blow that building up. Because I remember fire, but no smoke afterwards. But it was weird how you could see it in slow motion, that house fucking flexing like that. It looked good on camera. Yeah,
Danny Rowling says the
book. Stop pulling everything out of damn.
She's pulling all the books out of the books.
Why are you pulling the books out? And then she starts licking herself.
She's like, I didn't do that.
That's what I do. You're trying to play it off, huh?
Danny Rowling says the buildings they blew up in this film are no longer there, so they must have actually blown up. Yeah. I'm not actually, where did they shoot this? I'm not, because I'm like.
No.
I got notes from like Wikipedia, but I don't think it says like where they shot it from. Either that or I deleted that.
She's gonna pull every book out of the damn book.
That's okay. I'll put them back.
Why are you pulling the books out?
Wow, look, she's so busy.
She's trying to help. You're helping, huh?
She's helping.
Helping with the show.
You're so funny.
Yeah.
Danny Rowling, J.T. Walsh's performance deserved an award for this film. In my opinion, some people say it was over-the-top acting, but I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think it was over-the-top. I mean, maybe it was, but it was still, like, kind of fun. You could tell he was having a good time. And, like, Max von Sydow, you could tell he was absolutely having a good time, like, playing the devil. You know what I mean? But, I mean, he's my favorite thing about it, but this has such a great cast that... it's kind of hard not to like. Like I said, it's not, you know, one of the best Stephen King adaptations, but it's still pretty fucking good. DJ Maniac said, never saw the movie, but I read the book. Did they actually get Kiefer Sutherland back as Ace Merrill for the film adaptation? Yeah, we were just talking about that earlier. No, I wish they would have done that. I don't know if they did that in the longer TV version, like if they actually had that character show up again, because that would have been pretty cool if they'd done that. But in the theatrical version, no. They don't even mention... really, in the movie version, I think, like, Max von Sydow, he doesn't really have, like, an assistant as such. Although he does get, like, J.T. Walsh's character, who's Buster Keaton. That's, yeah, his last name's Keaton. Somebody calls him Buster, and it makes him mad. But he gets him to do shit for him, but they don't bring up Ace. And I actually didn't even remember, because it had been so long since I read the book, that Ace Merrill was a character in the book that was, like, a crossover from the body. But, yeah, he's not in the theatrical version, but I don't know about the longer one.
Ghostface said this was back when TV stunts were good. Even TV shows had good stunts, basically what he said. But, yeah, they cared back then. They didn't have CG, and you had stuntmen that were, I guess, in the guild. You had to keep them working. So, you know, it was just like, even in TV shows, you saw real cars being wrecked and... dudes fucking rolling down hills over and over again, getting all fucked up. But it was good, man. Live stunt, or not live, but in camera stunts. Dudes getting hurt and shit. It was better.
And back then, before they had CGI, it's like they probably didn't even occur to them that there would be like another way to do it someday. Yeah. It was just like the way you did it.
And White Lightning, fucking Burt Reynolds fucking caught air in a car holding on to the side of the truck, remember?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and when it hit the ground, boom, he came rolling off the side and then ran right up to the camera. Said that was Burt Reynolds hanging on the side of that fucking truck.
That was like a horrifying stunt.
It was a cool stunt.
Oh, my God.
You know, so don't you ever, ever let anybody say that fucking Burt Reynolds was not an action hero. Of course he was a fucking action hero.
I don't think anybody would
ever
say that.
He was one of the original action stars. One of the originals. Man of the South.
Yeah. Southern man.
Southern man.
Cave Guy says, I think King meant for the book to be a semi-comedy or a funny read. I definitely get that. Like I said, I haven't read the book in a long time. The movie does come across as a little bit like a black comedy. Now, I have seen some reviewers say that they thought that it was mean-spirited, but I don't know if I agree with that necessarily. I could have done without the dog getting skinned, but...
they didn't show it.
Well, they showed the aftermath.
Yeah, but they didn't show a dog.
They didn't show, like...
it was just obviously a rubber dog.
Yeah, I was just kind of like... they do kind of... but, man, we've seen, like, so many movies with fucking...
yeah.
With fucking animal cruelty in it lately. You know what I mean? It's kind of, like, bothered me. But, yeah, but I don't know. It's just kind of... it doesn't seem mean-spirited to me, but it definitely does seem like a black comedy. And I can't remember if that's the tone that Stephen King had going in the book. It wouldn't surprise me, because he does have, like, a really twisted sense of humor, which I think comes across in, like, a lot of his novels. But, you know, if you come at this, like, thinking it's going to be, like, kind of morbidly funny, then I think it's a lot better. I think... what else did I have to talk about? I'm kind of getting, like, lightheaded. We're like my... well, because I was supposed to... I recorded a video today, and we were going to record a video, but I was like, oh, I think my voice is fucked up, so I don't really want to strain it.
You sound real...
well, I don't really want to strain it, because I have, like, other recording and stuff that I have to do tomorrow, so I kind of want to rest it a little bit. Danny Rowling said Wilma's husband was clearly scared of his wife and became an alcoholic because of it. She was scary. I mean, you know what I mean. She was always, like, going around, like, fucking screeching at everybody and all that other kind of crap and telling Amanda Plummer she's going to kill her dog and all this other kind of crap. I mean, that's fucked up. But, yeah. So, I guess we'll cut it short. I got to clean all these books up that... Pookie pulled out. And like I said, I gotta rest my voice so it doesn't get too fucked up so I can do some more recording and live streaming tomorrow. So thanks everybody for dropping by. I think tomorrow we're gonna be talking about Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell, because we just watched that the other night. So we'll probably talk about that tomorrow. And so thanks everybody for coming to see us today, and we'll see you guys again tomorrow evening. Bye.